following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the R&R Podcast Network. Welcome to the flagship edition of the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. A hard-hitting, in-depth, cutting-edge look into the world of professional wrestling. Now, let's introduce your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. This is the flagship. It is episode number 120. I am your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois. Hope you guys are having a great weekend or a great day whenever you are listening to this. And I hope everybody is doing well. It's been a weird week of wrestling. There was a lot of good, a lot of bad, and a lot of ugly. Yes, I am bringing back that segment. We're going to cover what I liked and didn't like about Raw, SmackDown, AEW, and NXT. So what better way to do it than get into the good, the bad, and the ugly. Starting off on Raw, the good and what I really, really liked and probably has been the most entertaining part of Raw for several weeks now is what's going on between the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits. We've seen them play golf. We've seen them bowl. We've seen them throw axes. We've seen them play basketball. It's been really, really good stuff. Completely over the top, completely hokey. But like I said, and I've said ad nauseum, when you're just watching match after match after match, I want something different, and this is different, and this is very good stuff. And this week was a decathlon, which they ended up being tied 5-5 at the end, but it was so so ridiculous. They did sword fighting. Like, each team were able to pick whichever event they wanted. And I'm not going to go in particular order because I don't exactly remember all of it. But they, the Viking Raiders picked sword fighting and they got on their full gear and they had legit swords and shields. And then the prophet was like, no. I think it was Montez that, I'm not doing this. Nope, not doing it. He's like, are you kidding me? It's like, we forfeit. And then Ivar's like, what's a forfeit? They did stick fighting where you grab on to, you know, one person holds two sticks, the other person grabs the other side, and you try to pull them into this big vat or this big pool of milk that they had. And Montez is like, D'Angelo is like, why am I doing this? And Montez is like, because I'm lactose intolerant. Dawkins got pulled into it, and Montez was laughing at him, and Dawkins pulled him into it as well. It was pretty entertaining. They did a turkey leg eating contest, which obviously the Viking Raiders won. The funniest part of that was Dawkins saying, yo, man, I need some hot sauce for this. I was like, oh, man. It's too funny. What else did they do? They did a dance-off, and Montez danced to Shawn Michaels' theme. Then Eric was about to do his dance, and Ivar says, nah, I got this. Says, hit the music, and Fandango's music played. And then he started doing the Fandango. Grabbed one of the judges that was judging this dance off, and it was a woman. And he danced with her and dipped her. But still, in the end, The Street Profits won that one. Two judges voted. Two out of three judges voted for the Street Profits. I'm trying to think of what else. Oh, they did a shot put. Viking, the Street Profits won that one. But in the end, it ended up being 5-5. Oh, hurdles. Fucking hurdles was hilarious. So Dawkins, who's a hell of an athlete, they did a I don't even know if it's 50 yards, but let's just call it a 50 yard dash with hurdles. 100 meter hurdles, 50 yard hurdles, whatever you want to call it. Dawkins jumped over each one, and Ivar went through every single one. And when they got to the finish line, Eric and Ivar were congratulating each other, and they're like, "What are you doing? Why are you guys celebrating?" He's like, "Because I went through every hurdle." He's like, "No, you got to go over every hurdle." It was good stuff, but yeah, in the end, it ended up being, and I think I left one out. In the end, it ended up being 5-5. So we'll see what they do next week. It reminds me a lot of what MVP and Matt Hardy did back in the day when they're trying to do the, you know, I can do anything better thing. But this is an updated version and very, very, very entertaining. The bad would have to be this.
Seth, I'm not going to wait till the end of the match to hit you with the 619. Oh, no, no. The second that bell rings, there's a 619 with the name Monday Night Messiah written all over it. You're going to pay. You're going to pay for what you did to me and what you put my family through. I'm going to kick your ass.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Ray, you don't understand the power of your words. If you continue to spread these lies about what happened to you, about your sacrifice, Ray, you had the opportunity to walk away gracefully after your greatest moment here in WWE. You could walk away a champion, a legend, a hero, but you continue to spread this misinformation. I am a peaceful man. I gave you an opportunity to walk away a legend. I want to give you one more chance. I want to personally invite you and your son, Dominic, to come to Raw next week. And I hope you come in peace.
Enough, Seth, enough. You know damn well that the reason you're inviting me is only because I'm not medically cleared. But I will be cleared soon. And when I am, not just you, but the whole world will know about it. Te haré la vida un infierno,
Ray,
cabrón.
Ray, you've got this all wrong. You've got this whole thing backwards. You need to understand what I'm trying to tell you.
Ray's never been a great promo. Fantastic wrestler. Doesn't work for me. And Seth, I've been saying it for a while now. I don't understand. Well, I mean, I understand Seth's new character. I just don't like it. I don't like the way it's turned. It's just not. It's not fun for me. Seth being all calm and quiet, and yeah, obviously he's playing mind games with Ray because we know, you know, Seth grabbed Ray's face and dug the ring steps into his eye or whatever, or his eye into the ring steps, whichever. But then he kind of like snapped out of that. I mean, it's like a split personality thing, kind of. But nah, it's not working. It's not working for me. The ugly. This probably goes for Raw and SmackDown. The whole thing between Sasha and Bayley and the Iconics. Sasha and Bayley are okay. Like, they're okay promos. I kind of like their stuff they've done recently, but the Iconics are horrible and they're unlistenable. Is that a word? Unlistenable? I don't know. It is now. It's unlistenable. They're so annoying. Maybe that's the point. Maybe they're doing their job so well that I can't stand them and I want to change the channel. But I don't think they're great wrestlers to begin with. The Iconics suck. It's pretty much what I was trying to say. I don't even want to play the audio for you guys because it's bad. But Sasha and Bayley came out to interrupt Asuka. As Asuka was getting ready for her match with Charlotte Flair, a rematch from last week. And then Charlotte came out to interrupt them, and then the Iconics came out. And long story short, the Charlotte-Asuka rematch didn't happen. It turns into a tag team match. So now you have Bayley and Sasha Banks against Charlotte and Asuka against the Iconics. And the match sucked. I hate the fact that you're going to change what you've advertised and what you're promoting because these people come down. It happens almost every time you get people interrupting promos. All of a sudden it turns into an impromptu multi-person match. And it's so old. It's so overplayed. And it's absolutely probably the biggest thing that I hate about WWE booking right now. And for years now, actually, why do they have to keep going back to the same thing? It's obviously not working. But I don't know what it is with Vince and the writers doing stuff like this. So instead of Asuka and Charlotte, we get all of them together in a tag team match. That's just that's horrible. It is horrible. And the show was okay. It wasn't great. One thing that was great, and I guess I should have put it into the good part. Guys, I'm old. Like, seriously. I don't know how many times I got to tell you that. I'm serious. I forgot about the Peep Show. And I'm going to play for you right now. It's a lengthy segment, so grab some snacks. In fact, we're gonna take a break before we play that. When we come back, we will have the Peep Show, the return of the Peep Show with Christian. And his special guest will be Edge right after this.
Hey, this is Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. It's amazing to me that turtles have the ability to speak, let alone host wrestling podcasts. I guess that's what makes them rad.
The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
You know how excited I was for your return to the ring after 9 long years, after coming back from a career-ending injury, and how genuinely happy I was for you at WrestleMania, that big moment at WrestleMania. Yes! But I have to be honest with you. Right now, at this point, I think you're running on fumes. I gotta be honest with you. The greatest wrestling match ever. I don't even think you could pull that off in your prime. Look. We're best friends. And we have to be brutally honest with each other here, right? Right? Those are some high, lofty expectations. And if you think for 1 second that you can live up to that, you're lying to yourself. You're starting to buckle, and I don't think that you can handle the pressure.
You know what? Why don't you just pump the brakes right now, okay? Have you ever thought what it's like to be in my shoes right now? Huh? Have you ever thought what I'm going through emotionally when I haven't had a straight up wrestling match, no bells and whistles for 9.5 years. And not only that, now it's being called the greatest wrestling match ever. Do you know what that feels like? It's the equivalent of being dropped at the bottom of Mount Everest saying, you got no crew, you got no gear, now climb it. Just do it. Go. So pardon me if this edge is a little bit different. If this edge has some self-doubt. This isn't the same edge that used to look you in the eye every night to give you confidence when you were so nervous you didn't know if you could go out there before every one of our tag team matches. Pardon me if this edge has some self-doubt, because he's about to face a guy in Randy Orton at Backlash who has been here for those 9.5 years and is firing on every cylinder. And I don't even know how many cylinders I still have left under the hood.
Excuses. That's what I'm hearing right now. Excuses. What did you think was going to happen when you came back, huh? You were just going to come back and give him a greatest hits? Huh? You're going to hit a spear here, hit a spear there, flash a smile and go home? Did you think that's what was going to happen here? Huh?
Back.
What happened to you? Where's the belief? I know somebody that used to believe in you more than anyone. And that was your mom. She was there for every one of your big matches, for all of your title wins. She was sitting right there at ringside. And if you don't think she's going to be sitting there for this one, then you're wrong. You know she is. So let me put it to you like this, Adam. If Edge isn't going to show up at Backlash, then step through these ropes and go home right now. That's what I was looking for. That's what I was looking for. There's those eyes. We believe in you. We saw something at WrestleMania. We saw something that you've never done before. When you locked Randy Orton, he's never seen it either. When you locked him in that submission, you put him down. You have the anti-venom.
Come on, Edge.
We have confidence in you. We think you can do this. We think you're as good now as you've ever been. We think you can win. We think you can have the greatest wrestling match ever.
Edge, Christian, I am begging you both to please shut the hell up. If I have to listen to both of you spew these words out of your mouth any longer, I'm going to be sick to my stomach. We think. All I'm hearing right now is what you two think and not what you actually know. Edge, you made one guarantee for this match between you and I this Sunday at Backlash. And that guarantee, Edge, was that you were going to try. And I think that is absolutely pathetic. The expectations on this match are astronomical. What are you going to do? What are you going to do when you don't live up to those expectations? I am going to embarrass you. I am going to humiliate you. I am going to take every ounce of passion, every ounce of grit away from you until you, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, are a broken man who is forced to be sent back home where he belongs with his wife, Beth, and his daughters, his beautiful little baby girls, Lyric and Ruby and Edge. All because at this Sunday, at Backlash, in the greatest wrestling match ever, the redemption of Edge is over.
It's nonsense.
It's not over.
It's all nonsense.
No, it's not.
Can thank Christian for his brutal honesty and perhaps building up the confidence of Edge.
An effort by Christian, the longtime best friend of Edge. Obviously very emotional for Edge here tonight.
Edge's acting classes have really paid off. Like, he did a fantastic job. Great sell job, great emotions. You couldn't see it, but the way his face was when he started and then when it changed when Christian fired him up and he's like, yeah, there you go. That's what I was looking for. Those eyes right there is what I was looking for. It's just fantastic stuff. Randy is great too. Look, I've told you guys how much I don't like the promotion of this match as being called the greatest wrestling match ever. And we even have Kurt Angle on here, give his predictions of who's going to win. It's stupid, but the way Edge put it into perspective was what needed to be done. For Edge to say, you know, I haven't had a one-on-one, you know, a real wrestling match with no bells and whistles, referring back to the Last Man Standing match at WrestleMania. I haven't had a real one-on-one wrestling match in 9.5 years. And now they're promoting this as the greatest wrestling match ever. He said it's like, you know, throwing you at the bottom of Mount Everest. I think it was Mount Everest. With no crew, no nothing, and saying, you know, fight your way to the top. I love that fact. I love the fact that he's been so unsure about himself because he hasn't wrestled in so long. And then on top of that, you have the Machine promoting this as the greatest wrestling match ever before you even step foot in the ring. That is genius. That is a perfect way for Adam Copeland to describe the insurmountable odds that he thinks he's against, especially with Randy Orton being here the whole time, firing on every cylinder, and Edge doesn't know how many cylinders he has left under the hood. Fuck me, that was fantastic. So there's your good, bad, and ugly. I mean, it's not the great, good, bad, and ugly. It's my dumbass fault for putting that out of order, but it's my show. Get over it. So let's move on to AEW, and you can tell by the ratings the show hasn't been good in a while, and the ratings were very close this week. I think it was like 679 to 673 AEW, so if that tells you anything, they're not doing eights or nines. AEW has not been good for a long time. There have been some good parts, but as a whole, the show has really, really not been good. And, you know, I go through wrestling Twitter because I guess kind of because I have to just kind of judge where people are on all this. And you're on one side or the other. And no matter what happens on AEW or NXT, it doesn't matter. You're going to have your diehards, and they're all going to hate each other. You know, you have to be team AEW. You have to be team NXT. There's a few people in there that are like, oh, why can't we just love both shows? But the majority of people, it's like it's North and South. It's like a civil wrestling war. But let's get into the good. The good was Chris Jericho on commentary. Don't ask me why he was out there. Before he was replacing JR and Excalibur, they were all there. It was a four-man booth. And Jericho did commentary for quite a while. And he adds so much to the show. That was a smart move. The good and this next good and bad kind of tie into each other. So I'll use that point last. The other good in this show, Sammy Guevara got a win against Colt Cabana. The best ever. He's going to kill me for messing his lineup. The best ever, the Spanish God, Sammy Guevara, finally gets a win. Sorry, Sammy. You've had a rough year, buddy. Gets a win against Colt Cabana in a really, really good match. Orange Cassidy had a fantastic match. Probably my favorite match of the night. And I used to hate this guy. I used to not even understand what the whole gimmick was about. But we had Jake Hager, Santana Ortiz against Orange Cassidy and best friends, Chuck Taylor and Trent, in a really, really good match. But Orange Cassidy was the one that really shined. He fired up near the end and took everybody out. It got really technical, and it was almost like a La Mahistral cradle, but he cradled up Ortiz for the win. There's a couple good and bad moments that tie in together, so I'm going to do my best to weave into that. So, Orange Cassidy was the good, and the bad part was Jericho leaves the booth, and the Inner Circle beat the crap out of the best friends, and especially Orange Cassidy. I mean, they literally beat him up with a bat, busted him open, which, here you go again, more blood on AEW TV show. Not a pay-per-view. I already went to that last week. Then they grab a bag, fill it up with what they called blood oranges. No pun intended, right? They beat up Orange Cassidy with a bag of blood oranges. And then Jericho has the line of the night. Jericho calling him Blood Orange Cassidy because he was bleeding. And his name is Orange, and they use blood oranges. It's just whatever.
The Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
Another point for the bad for AEW. FTR, Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler, had their debut match here in AEW against The Butcher and The Blade. The bad... And it was a really good match. Don't get me wrong. It was a really good match. Except for the fact that the Butcher was so completely out of position and didn't know how to take the Shatter Machine, which they're now calling the Goodnight Express, which I fucking love that name. It was horrible. It was it'll probably be on Botchamania. It was so bad. The commentators no-sold it. Obviously, that's their job. But the Butcher was so far out of position. It looks so, so sloppy. You'll have to go back and watch it. I can't explain how bad it was. But then they hit the Spike Piledriver, which they're calling the Mindbreaker, which is funny. Because, the Brainbusters, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson, used to use that same move. So, Brainbuster, Mindbreaker, come on. Of course. I also like the fact that Tully and Arn and Jake Roberts were sitting in the crowd kind of watching this match and judging them and possibly looking to be their next manager. And what I liked about this a lot was Sean Spears sitting behind Tully and kind of staring a hole through his head, through the back of his head. Because Tully's been looking for a tag team partner for Sean Spears, but now Tully is out there scouting, FTR, and Spears did not like it. That was really, really cool. And there was a lot of people sitting actually in the seats, like not just like behind the barricade or whatever, but like literally in the seats of Daly's Place. There was quite a few people there. I don't know why they knew that from the beginning. Keep them even farther away from each other. It adds for a better visual than these guys just sitting in folding chairs, right behind the barricade and acting like assholes. That bad was that Goodnight Express. It was just so, so bad. But here is the good.
Big win, big debut for FTR here in AEW. Exactly what you wanted to do, right?
Oh, yeah. This is it. This is the pinnacle of professional wrestling. And on top of that, it's the pinnacle of tag team wrestling. Now, you've got the absolute
What's
best.
What's this?
All right, Young Bucks.
Young Bucks have something to say here.
The rivalry between the Bucks and FTR goes back
years. We don't
want
to be rude or anything. We just actually wanted to come out here and congratulate you guys. That match was great.
You're not wrong.
Not only that, I mean, we also actually wanted to come out here and say thank you. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, you guys sort of helped us out of a jam, and while we appreciate the sentiment, we also couldn't help but notice that you two sort of failed to properly introduce yourselves to us. That's okay. That's okay. Since we're all standing here in this ring right now, maybe we can do that thing right now, right? My name's Matt. This is my brother Nick. We've been carrying tag team wrestling solely on our backs for the past decade and a half. We're the best tag team in AEW. We're the Young Bucks. It's so nice to meet you. Finally.
Oh!
Wow, look at that.
Butch ain't gonna stand there and listen to him talk. But the FTR is taking it over.
Wheeler and Hartwood.
Who's this? Who's that? Get Sabian and Jimmy Havoc, that freak.
What the hell's going on here?
We got let's look at this brawl going on right after the match.
Everything is broken down, and here comes
Kenny Omega's here.
AEW World Tag Team Champions.
Hangman Page.
He's left happy hour early. He'll be pissed.
It's happy evening for him at this point.
And now three of the top tag teams in the world inside an AEW ring.
And four members of the Elite ganging up on FTR as they always do. Look, Kenny Omega.
Omega, Hangman, the Young Bucks.
What is this? Are they on the same page? Are they arguing? A little bit of a mystery here.
I say DTA, don't trust anybody.
Young Bucks and FTR face to face. Matt Jackson being kind of cocky and saying we've been the best tag team for the last decade and a half. Couldn't say 15 years. I don't know. Decade and a half sounds better to him. But the Bucks have been really, really cocky. And they started this whole thing, you know, 5-6 years ago. As I mentioned last week, you know, FTR fucked the Revival. And Cody kind of played along with that as well. So I don't know who the heels and the faces are here. Because, I mean, FTR have kind of been playing the heels, but then they take on Butcher and the Blade, who are also heels, and you have the Bucks acting heelish. That's the bad part. The promo was great. Like, the promo did its job. That's why I'm putting that in the good category. But some of the content in it, and just, you know, the unclear part of you don't know who is supposed to be the face or the heel when you have the Elite guys, you know, acting, you know, very heelish. That's where I get confused. So, and it goes to what I've been saying about AEW for quite some time now. Their booking and their creative just all over the place. There's no real clear stuff. Now to the ugly. And I'm not just saying this because it's, you know, the popular thing to do. Nyla Rose and Penelope Ford against Hikaru Shida and Chris Statlander. God fucking awful match. I've been saying it every single week for months. Since the inception of AEW Dynamite, the women's division is horrible and needs to be taken off. Put them on dark. I don't know how many times I got to say this. Take them off of TV, network television. Get QT and the other trainers there and train these women how to fucking wrestle properly. If they're not good enough, then they shouldn't be in AEW. Period. End of story. I'm trying so hard not to cuss anymore. And stuff like this just pisses me off. It's not good. It has not been good. There's been very few fleeting moments where it has been good. But as a whole, the AEW women's division has fucking sucked. It's got to go. The other ugly is Darby Allin, who I've been hot and cold on him. There's some things I've really liked, and there's a lot of things where I've left, you know, that's left me scratching my head, be like, what the fuck did you do that for? And most of it has to do with his vignettes. He was with Tony Hawk because obviously Darby Allin is an extreme athlete. He's a skateboarder. Told Tony Hawk that he is not medically cleared to wrestle. So, you know, whatever. And Tony says, well, you don't have to be medically cleared here, you know, to be here, brother. And Darby takes a skateboard, goes up to the top of a ladder, 6-10 foot ladder, maybe. I'm not sure. Could be 6 feet because he's only like 4 foot two. And it just looks like a tall ladder. Gets up to the top of the ladder with the skateboard and tries to skate off onto the ramp that's below. And they showed about 8 or 9 outtakes of him just failing, just falling on his face, his shoulder, his back. And then finally he hits it at the end. They're like, woohoo. Here's why this is absolutely fucking stupid. I'm talking about real life stupid. And we'll mix it in with the storyline. He's not medically cleared to wrestle, which I don't know if that's true, or if he's not wrestling because of COVID. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe he's hurt. Pointless. That doesn't even matter, this argument. If he's on TV saying he's medically cleared from a storyline perspective, and then he's here skateboarding and failing so many times, yeah, he kept getting back up, which is fine. But you know what? What if he didn't? So from a storyline perspective, you have this guy who's not medically cleared to wrestle, fucking skateboards on off the top of a ladder, could potentially injure himself even worse and be out even longer. Couple that into real life. If he's really hurt, why the fuck is he on top of a fucking ladder skateboarding? He shouldn't be up there to begin with. This is where dipshit fuckhead fanboy Tony Khan need to stop being a fucking mark and realize that this is a fucking business. This is where I'm really getting pissed off now. This guy is the worst. He is such a mark for his guys and for wrestling. We've seen him have other, you know, let his guys wrestle in other promotions, which is fine. If you're not going to use them on TV, you want to give them the opportunity to make money, whatever. I mean, it's such a fine line to walk there. I understand why he wants to take care of his guys financially by letting them wrestle somewhere else. Well, they just give him fucking guaranteed contracts or whatever. I don't know the pay system in AEW, but to avoid having them go out and wrestle in other territories and possibly get hurt on somebody else's watch fucks you over. Because they can't wrestle on your TV now because they're injured, because they went somewhere else. So, you know what? That is a fucking horrible idea. Even though it's maybe the best intentions of Tony, the idea sucks because then they're useless to you. So maybe you should give them some incentive or pay them more. I don't know. You and your dad are billionaires. Fucking figure it out. Like, take care of the guys. Pay them more so they don't have to go anywhere else. And if they want to go somewhere else because, well, they got commitment, so they want to apply their craft here, there, blah, 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 fuck it. Be the leader. Vince McMahon doesn't fucking let that happen. Vince McMahon owns the biggest wrestling company in the universe. Pun intended. Act like you're a fucking smart businessman. Don't let them do that. Don't let them go somewhere else. And don't let stupid fucking Darby Allin take a fucking skateboard, go up to the top of a ladder, and jump off of it. Thankfully for Darby Allin, the person, whatever his name is, could be his name, I don't fucking know. Thankfully, he didn't get seriously injured. He could have broken his neck. He could have died. And for what? For a fucking vignette on a TV show? Tony Khan needs to take better care of his performers and don't let him do stupid shit like this. You know what happened to Robert Edwards? He used to play for the New England Patriots. Played fucking beach volleyball in the offseason and tore his ACL or MCL, one of the two. Fucked up his knee and couldn't play football that season. This is why NFL teams put in stipulations like this, like you can't fucking own a motorcycle because you can go out and get hurt. if you're under contract to this team, there's certain things you can't do because it's a liability to your health and safety. Tony Khan needs to do the same thing. And if stuff like this goes on in WWE, then I will say the same thing to them. But you know what? You don't fucking see that on TV, on their program. It's simple. AEW needs to tighten the fucking ship up and treat this as a serious, legitimate business so your performers do not get injured there or anywhere else on somebody else's watch.
The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
Let's get into NXT. Yeah, I've been saying this for a while. When Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza got kidnapped, I guess, thrown into a back of a truck or an SUV by a bunch of masked guys, that there was going to be more to that.
We haven't had the opportunity to talk since last week, but I just wanted to say congratulations. You're a phenomenal competitor, an amazing cruiserweight. And what we did last week was special. I just wanted to thank you for the amazing match we had last week. Hey, and I can't help but hear everybody talking about my situation last week, but everybody should have been talking about you. Everybody should have been talking about your journey, the fact that you debuted in this tournament, the fact you debuted in this tournament, went all the way to the finals, and you won. You deserve, Phantasma, to be the NXT Cruiserweight Champion. I know I can beat you. If you give me another opportunity at the NXT Cruiserweight Championship.
Tú y yo. ¿Sí? Claro que sí. Sí.
Whoa. Oh, it's the two masked men again.
These two try to get involved in the tournament finals match last week. They've tried to go after Phantasma multiple times.
Yeah, Maverick and Phantasma standing in the center of the ring trying to keep the masked men at bay.
We know their intentions can't be good.
What about El Eo del Phantasma's intentions?
Oh, my God!
Wait a minute! El Eo del Phantasma and the two masked men just beating down Drake Maverick. So much for respect and sportsmanship from the new NXT Cruiserweight Champion.
What?
Well, Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde.
I thought they were kidnapped.
Oh, Phantom Driver by El Eo del Phantasma. This does not bode well for Drake Maverick. What the...
I am Santos Escobar. I'm the NXT Cruiserweight Champion. And no one can touch me.
Oh! Double splashes from Wilde and Mendoza, and I believe El Eo del Phantasma has just revealed himself to be Santos Escobar. They've definitely not masked their intentions here in NXT.
The fact that they never attacked El Hijo del Phantasma, I'm like, yeah, this dude's fucking super behind it. And obviously he is. So he's now unmasked. He is being known as Santos Escobar and says that he's untouchable. And they beat up poor Drake Maverick. So, looks like we have a new faction in NXT, and I really, really liked it. The other good from this was Adam Cole against Dexter Lumis. Really, really good match until Dream and got involved in the end and kind of end up being kind of fucked up. The bad from this, though, and you guys are going to think I'm crazy. Was this.
I have run roughshod on this brand as the most dominant champion in this brand's history. Nobody has held the NXT title the way that Adam Cole has. Nobody in NXT, nobody in WWE will be able to beat me for this championship. So now that the Velveteen Dream is in the rearview mirror, I want to shift our focus to one Dexter Lumis. Just wait, okay? Because Dexter Lumis, he's crazy. He's psychotic. He's a freak who always gets in our business. And I don't know what his deal is. I don't know if he's obsessed with me or he's obsessed with my NXT championship. But what he did to Roddy and Bobby at TakeOver In Your House was absolutely despicable.
That creep is obsessed with all of us. He put us in a trunk for over 12.
A trunk, exactly that.
Right.
Everybody knows I hate being stuffed in trunks. Everybody.
Well, listen, he's scared of us too, because we got ourselves out of there. That goof was nowhere to be found.
Yeah. No, there he is. Right behind you. There he is. Look.
Roddy, right there.
Cole. Roddy, there's no... Okay, Roddy, calm down,
Cole.
Okay?
Right there,
okay? I believe you, okay? But just, Roddy, just take a breath. Wherever you are, I want you to listen very closely.
There he is again,
Roddy.
Look!
Nobody is there.
Rod.
I'm telling you, he was
Rod, there.
Rod, settle down.
The mustache, the hair.
Guys, just stop
glove.
For a second. Stop!
Remember the glove.
Stop! Everyone just pump the brakes. Pump the brakes, okay? Because the Adam Cole who's speaking to you right now, it's not Adam Cole, the greatest NXT champion of all time. No. The Adam Cole who is speaking to you is the one who has his best friends back. Because Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish are two of the greatest men that I have ever known. And if you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us. Because Dexter, later tonight, me and you, we have a little match. Everybody and their mother knows that I'm not 100%. I went through a war on Sunday, but that's a day in the life of the greatest NXT champion of all time. So later tonight, we are going to fight. Not only are we going to fight, I am going to beat you. Not only am I going to beat you, I am going to send you back to the drawing board where you belong. And that's undisputed.
Adam Cole's a decent promo, but Roderick Strong sucks. And I kind of get where they're going for. And, you know, they did show Dexter behind the plexiglass. And then when he's like, there he is. And then they went back to the shot of the plexiglass. He wasn't there. Dexter did that twice or whatever. Roddy's seeing ghosts. I don't know, whatever. But Roddy's just not a good promo. Adam Cole's pretty good. Fish is... He's all right, but that part of the promo before that match fell short for me. The other bad was after the Cole Lumis match. The lights go out, and Scarlett, the manager of Killer Cross, Karrion Kross, walked to the ring and had a present for Adam Cole, and it was an hourglass that she put in the ring and turned it over, which means the sands of time were now counting down. And the ugly kind of ties into this as well. The ugly were the superstars that were at ringside, the NXT trainees and performers. They were chanting the catchphrase as part of Karrion Kross's song. I don't even know what it is. Something about something and praying or whatever. I don't know. Banging on the glass, chanting that over and over again, like it's some kind of a cult thing. They're fucking wrestlers. I've said it's stupid. I've said this several times already, how stupid it is to have your contracted wrestlers there acting like fans. It's fucking dumb. I'm sorry. I'm not going to change my mind on it. These are superstars. These are professional athletes. It's stupid. But they're chanting Karrion Kross's, you know, catchphrase that's in their song. Hope and pray or fucking, I don't even know what it is. It's so stupid. And then when she turns the hourglass over, they start chanting TikTok, TikTok. And you got Mauro Ranallo overselling the fuck out of it. And look, Mauro is part of the ugly on every show. And I'm sorry. As a person, I'm sure he's great. I know he has anxiety issues. A lot. I do. A lot of us have anxiety problems. His were extreme to the point to where, you know, JBL was, quote, bullying him and he didn't want to be on TV or whatever. Anyway, Mauro as a on-air personality sucks. I'm sorry. Over the top, overly dramatic. It's unwatchable. It's unlistenable again. I can't stand him. And then he oversells everything. And he did it here, too. Some of his lines and puns are so stupid and so cringy. But this is bad. This is bad. Bad slash ugly. Ugly mostly being the stupid-ass NXT talent over there acting like fucking marks. Not much else really to talk about NXT here. NXT and AEW were pretty bad. And the rating shows. Yeah. There's not much else to say about it. So let's move into the good and bad and the ugly for SmackDown, which look, wrestling as a whole pretty much sucked this week. But let's get into SmackDown. We opened a show with some fucking ugly. So I'm not going to get into that yet. I'm literally trying to look for some of the good that's here, and it's difficult. I will say this: the stuff we're getting with Otis is good. Otis is still good. Him, Tucker came back. I don't know where the hell Tucker's been, and I thought at some point they're going to have some dissension between these guys. They haven't shown it yet. Tucker's been true blue best friend. Tucker came back and was trying to get Otis prepared for the match later on. It was going to be Heavy Machinery and Braun Strowman against Miz and Morrison and Dolph Ziggler. So Tucker has a blindfold on Otis. And he's like, I got to get you prepared and ready, which is weird because he's been gone the whole time and Otis has been here. So maybe Tucker should be the one getting back into shape, but whatever. Semantics. Tucker had a blindfold on Otis and was trying to say, you need to hone in on your senses. And he rang a bell and he's like, oh, that's easy. That's a bell. And then he put like a plate of sausage in front of his face. He's like, and then Mandy comes up and kisses Otis, and Otis is like, whoa, Tucky, I appreciate your enthusiasm, but he thought it was Tucker. Takes off the blindfold. He's like, oh, my peach. that was fun. That was good stuff. The other good was, even though it was a very, very long match, like, holy shit, like, I don't even know if it was 30 minutes, 20, 30, 40 minutes, was the finals of the Intercontinental title tournament between AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan, and, everything you would expect in a match between these two was so, so good. And AJ actually won. I was very, very shocked that AJ... I thought Daniel Bryan was a shoo-in. But AJ finally gets the Intercontinental title, a title that's been eluding him for quite a while. He was also the Intercontinental champion in New Japan, so that's kind of cool that he's won both Intercontinental titles. But a phenomenal match. It really was. It was a phenomenal match. And you need to go out of your way to watch it because it was really, really, really good. At one point, my wife went out and did some stuff. Came back, she's like, these guys are still wrestling? I'm like, yeah. Yeah, it was. The bad. Again, Sasha and Bayley and the Iconics. They did it all. I mean, Asuka and Charlotte weren't there, but plug in Alexa and Nikki, and it's the same, pretty much the same fucking thing without the match. But, like, just the interview segment was not good. And the Iconics are so, so, so annoying. Seriously annoying. The ugly was this.
Before I put my signature on that dotted line right there, you're going to have to take a urine test. And Jeff, if you fail, which, let's be honest, you probably will, then you're in a whole heap of trouble. And you definitely won't be getting that match at Backlash, because there's no way I'm going to step in the ring. With a junkie.
My name is Jeff Hardy, and I'm an alcoholic. And if this is what I have to do to get to you, then fine. I go to meetings every week, and I talk about how I've let my family down. I talk about how I've let my fans down. I talk about how I've let myself down. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, man. My demons are starving. And sometimes all it takes to want to feed them is to be in the presence of a bastard like you. So I'll go along with your BS just so I get my hands on you this Sunday.
And well, Jeff's doing his business there. This is the public service announcement from the Celtic Warrior to everybody at home. Kids, if you're a user, you're a loser. Don't wind up like Jeff Hardy. Don't do drugs. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Come on, Jeff. Hurry up. We don't have all night. These people are somewhere to go. Come on, fella.
Why are you looking?
Be quiet.
Whoa. Check it out. Somebody really enjoyed happy hour today, huh? What's the matter, Jeff? Huh? You angry at me?
You know, another classic saying comes to mind. Sometimes it's better to be pissed off than pissed on.
Sheamus took a big cup full of piss. I mean, it was a pretty big jar. So to set the stage for you, if you guys, you know, didn't see it and you're relying on me to paint a picture for you, I'll do my best. So this started out the show. Jeff Hardy, Sheamus contract signing for Backlash, which is coming up tomorrow, this Sunday. They had this, they had a table there with a contract on it, as usual. But then there was this, I'll just call it a booth, like a waist-high booth. And maybe, maybe midsection high. Maybe just under the tittles. You couldn't see on the inside. It had like a black like curtain around it. And Sheamus, obviously, as you heard, said, I'm not going to sign this contract until Jeff Hardy takes a urine test. And they had a doctor there. Quote, doctor, not a doctor. Anyway, we'll get into that here later in the news. Jeff has this big, giant fucking jar. Like, you know, if you ever take a urine test for a job or whatever, it's like a small cup, you know, 2-3-4 ounce cup. This is like a fucking 20 ounce jar, right? pees and it fills it almost all the way to the top. He's like, wow, you've been holding out for quite a while, or whatever the hell he said. Doctor holds a piece of litmus paper, like a pH test, whatever. sticks it in the glass, and he's holding it there. And live, I don't know if it was live or not, but on national television. holding this little litmus paper into the jar of pee while they talk. And then obviously Jeff gives the line, you know, there's an old saying, it's better to be pissed off. And I'm like, oh, fuck, no. I knew where they're going. Then to be pissed on, grabs the cup and splashes it all over Sheamus's face. And Sheamus sold it like a champ, and even sold it after the commercial break, like washing his mouth out, gargling with mouthwash. And the doctor came in and said that, and I don't know why the doctor's fucking telling Sheamus. He should be telling, like, maybe a WWE official. Tells him that the test was negative. Jeff Hardy has no drugs or alcohol in his body. So that kind of wraps up, you know, the storyline of the fact that they're trying to blame Jeff for being inebriated last week and running over Sheamus and all that running over Elias when it was Sheamus the entire time. This kind of confirms it, even though, like, I don't know how long that's stuff like that's supposed to stay in your body. I mean, is a week enough time to get clean? Who fucking cares, right? But literally, and I don't know if it was real piss or not, but if it was, Jesus Christ, Sheamus is a champ. But just the insinuation that Sheamus got doused with Jeff Hardy's urine has set the world on fire. Everybody's talking about how stupid or how great it was. I'm on the line, the fact it was fucking stupid. And it's right up Vince McMahon's alley. This is toilet humor, literally. Literally. This is what Vince does. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Take the jar. Take the jar full of piss. Take the jar full of urine and throw it in Sheamus's face. Oh, God damn it, pal. Oh, that's such good shit, pal. No, that's good piss. That's good piss, pal.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Vampiro. This right here is the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Tune in, get tuned up, get informed, and enjoy the podcast.
The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
That is the good, the bad, and the ugly for this week of wrestling on television. So let's now get into the current news of professional wrestling in the RTW News Desk. All right, we start off with the doctor on SmackDown. There was a user on Reddit that mentioned that the doctor was actor Frank George. So, yes, not a real doctor. He's actually a contractor on Fiverr, which if you don't know what Fiverr is, it's a fantastic website. It's where you can hire all kinds of people to do anything you want. Intros, YouTube videos, create logos for you. You know, there's coaches on there. There's classes you can take. Anything and everything on there. This guy is a hired actor to make funny videos. So, yeah. WWE never, ever uses real people. I mean, they never real doctors. They hardly ever, real cops or real paramedics and all that. But, yeah, this guy is actor Frank George. So, how somebody knew that on Reddit, these guys have no life whatsoever. But, yeah, that's that. We had, unfortunately, a couple of deaths this week, again, in the world of wrestling. First off, Mr. Wrestling 2, Johnny Walker, passed away at the age of 85. Current cause of death is unknown. Walker got his start in wrestling in the 1950s in the NWA. He would go on to win multiple titles throughout the 70s and 80s, including the NWA World Tag Team Championship, the NWA United States Junior Heavyweight Championship, the NWA Georgia Heavyweight Championship, and the NWA National Heavyweight Championship. He also had a short stint with the WWF in the mid-80s, though he was used mainly as an enhancement talent. His last match of record took place in 2007, coming out of retirement to compete in Hawaii Championship Wrestling, where he was the Director of Talent Relations. He was inducted into the WCW Hall of Fame in 93 when they used to do the Slamboree pay-per-views. For a couple of years, they had their own little Hall of Fame there. He was also inducted into the National Wrestling Alliance Hall of Fame in 2012 and the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame in 2014. He was named Wrestler of the Year by Pro Wrestling Illustrated in 1975. Our thoughts and prayers go out to Johnny Walker's family and their friends. Also passing away this week was CMLL wrestler Aris El Guerrero, who died at age 50. Born Jose Francisco Gonzalez Lopez, Aris was a staple on CMLL's weekly shows for years, wrestling for more than 30 years. Started pretty young. Although his in-ring activity has decreased in recent years, his most recent match actually took place in February on a CMLL show. The announcement was first made by the Municipal Commission of Boxing and Lucha Libre of Puebla, but the official announcement, translated to English, says, the wrestling family of Puebla is in mourning with profound sadness. The Municipal Commission of Boxing and Lucha Libre of Puebla is here to inform about the death of Jose Francisco Gonzalez Lopez, better known as Aris El Guerrero. We send our deep and sincere condolences. May he rest in peace. So again, it's very, very sad to lose anybody, but especially two of the greats in the world of professional wrestling from two different worlds, literally. So our thoughts and prayers go out to the Lopez family and their friends. So unfortunate to hear about that. FTR was talking trash again. They were on the Jim Cornette Experience podcast this week. And they're quoted as saying, "We thought we were Hunter's guys because we worked so hard for so long to make NXT mean something. We believed in NXT and Hunter," said Dax. Raw 25 came along and we had heard rumblings of what we were doing. When we found out, it broke my heart. That was when Hunter and the Click came out and ran through me and Cash. They hit us with every one of their finishers. We came to the back and I punched a brick wall. I started flipping out. Cash grabbed me and was like, "Okay, it's okay. It'll be all right." I was in tears, not because I was sad, but because I was so upset and hurt. A guy we had so much respect for, and we still do, we wouldn't believe he would allow that to happen to us. Really? You wouldn't believe that Triple H wouldn't go into business for himself or, you know, take care of his real buddies? he said, on the flip side, it's not his company. He doesn't call the shots. Vince calls the shots. Yes and no. I mean, yes and no. But anyway, Cash went on to say, it wasn't the actual segment. It was the comments before and after. Obviously, we're out there to do a job for those guys and make them look good. It felt like they just didn't respect us and what we were about to do. We couldn't get a handshake or a thank you. Dax added, X-Pac said thank you, but everyone else walked right past us. That really hurt us. I can't say anyone loses faith in Hunter. I'm not sure we lost faith in Hunter that day, but as much as we lost faith in that company. That's really unfortunate that they feel that way. The Undertaker got emotional watching Vince McMahon get emotional on his documentary, The Last Ride. Speaking with TV Insider, Undertaker said, "With Vince, our relationship has far exceeded the boss-employee relationship. I still work for him, but he is a guy who is on the short list of those I consider dear friends. It was a little emotional for me to watch him not be able to put into words our relationship because he always has an answer for everything. To see him not able to answer the question, it was emotional for me to watch that. I'm not an overly emotional person, but it's nice to know people have such strong feelings for you when you know how you feel about them. It was a strong moment seeing Vince like that, for sure." The next episode of Undertaker Last Ride will be made available on demand on the WWE Network on Sunday, June 14th, after Backlash. Nia Jax. A lot of people have been on her case lately, especially after injuring Kairi Sane again last week in a horrible botched segment, which I didn't even cover. But people have been on Nia for a while now, saying that she shouldn't be put in that position. Sal Monster even said on his show last week, you know, she has a great look, is what WWE were thinking. Let's put her on TV. She obviously was clearly not ready to be on TV. And she needs to be back in NXT, in developmental, because she's very, very sloppy. But Nia says that in real life, fans are very nice to her and said that her detractors come from a small percentage of social media fans. It's not a small percentage, and it's not just social media fans, dumbass. Nia returned to WrestleMania 36 after having a double knee replacement or double knee surgery. And in the time that she's returned, she's had two matches with Kairi Sane, where Sane left the ring more banged up than intended. This has led to a vocal portion of social media fans denouncing Nia's in-ring work, with some even calling for her to be removed from the championship picture. I think she should be removed from WWE TV, period. Speaking with Talk Sport, Jax opened up about being affected by the negativity on social media, but taking solace in the real-life interactions she's had with members of the WWE Universe. She said, I feel like every person or character who would say, oh, whatever they say doesn't bother me, are kind of lying. Because I am working for the approval of an audience. Whether it be hating or loving, I want their reaction. So when you're on Twitter and you see it constantly, it can definitely get to you a little bit. It's like, wow, all I'm seeing is negativity. But when I step back and I actually immerse myself into the WWE Universe, like when I get to see the crowd and fans, which is fucking never, she goes, I know that's such a small percentage on Twitter who have nothing better to do than just hate on somebody. She concluded, the fans in real life are so welcoming, so giving, and so understanding. I've had nothing but positive feedback from them, and I'm super grateful for that. Look, Nia, you suck. I'm going to say it right now. You are sloppy. You are dangerous. Poor Kairi Sane, man. I'm telling you. First, it was the, what these be called, like the Baldo bomb, you know, picked her up with both hands in a chokehold and threw her into the turnbuckle. And instead of landing in the, you know, straight, you know, standing up in the turnbuckles, she threw her so where Kairi landed on the bottom turnbuckle, the second turnbuckle, landed on the mat, her head striking the bottom turnbuckles. This time was throwing her into the ring steps and just absolutely launched her into it. Her feet weren't set. She launched her into the ring steps and almost killed her. Nia needs to be taken off of TV. And the fact that she's just saying that there's a small percentage of social media fans that think she sucks. Yeah, you're a little bit off base on that one, kid. Finally, we'll get into a little bit more of FTR, but this kind of ties into what happened this week with WWE writers. Again, on the Jim Cornette Experience, Jim Cornette asked FTR who was more full of bullshit, was it Bruce Pritchard or Paul Heyman? Dax said they were both completely past their eyeballs into their brain full of shit. Bruce, at least he didn't believe the shit he was feeding us. Paul Heyman was serving it on a platter and cutting it up for us and feeding it like we were birds. Bruce had a little more respect for us than Paul had. Paul respected us. He had conversations with Arn about us, but Bruce respected us more. Paul loved his job more than he loved us, and I can't fault him for that. Cash went on to say, neither guy is in a position I envy. They're both as full of bullshit as they have to be to survive and make the money they need to make. That leads us to the announcement that was made this week that Paul Heyman is effectively stepping down as writer of Raw and will focus more on being an in-ring talent, which with Brock not being there, I don't know what the hell that's supposed to mean. Bruce Pritchard, who has been the head writer of SmackDown, is now also the head writer of Monday Night Raw. Here's the problem with that, and this goes back to my conversation I had with Vince Russo on the show a couple of months ago. You keep putting the same guys in the same position that they've been in for years, and your product will never grow. I mean, come on, guys. Do you really think the ratings were that great in 93, 94, 95, you know, when Pritchard was there and helping book and was part of talent relations and all that. How great was WWE TV then? Why do you keep putting the same guys in the same spots? Bruce is a yes man. His podcast isn't even that great to listen to anymore. I used to love it. But he's got less time for it, and he's working for WWE, so he's not going to say anything bad about them at all. SmackDown's been okay. And I look, I'm not saying taking Paul out was wrong. It probably was. I mean, Raw has sucked for a long, long time. If that's really attributed to Paul Heyman, then that's fine. They made the right decision. But to put Bruce in that position, like, he's not overworked enough. Fuck, that's how he got burnt out the first time. So now you're putting him in charge of Raw and SmackDown? I don't envy Bruce Prichard at all. And the fact that he wanted to do that, he's a crazy son of a bitch. But look, and I'm not saying Bruce doesn't have a great mind for wrestling, but again, when it's the same old people put in these spots of power and are going to be the ones that are overseeing the writing for these shows, it wasn't good then and it's not going to be good now. There's not going to be a light bulb that goes off in Bruce's head and be like, oh, this is the direction we need to change into. He's going to do what he knows. And while I'm a fan of old school wrestling, I'm not a fan of all of it. And that also ties into the imbecile of the week. Let's hear what Polyester has to say about Bruce Prichard.
Good evening to each and every one of you imbeciles out there. Welcome back to your favorite segment of the Ninja Turtle podcast, the imbecile of the week, hosted by... well, me, Polyester, the Evil Tanner. The year is 1995. The WWF is going probably through its worst period since it started. At least since Vince McMahon took over in the early 80s. Had a string of just terrible, terrible creative. And at the head of that creative, the one, the only, Bruce Prichard. 1996, WCW decides to turn Hogan heel, the NWO is born, WCW starts going up, and up, and up. 1997, WCW still going up, WWF still going down. So, Vince McMahon decides... let's swap some things out around here. Let's get this magazine writer called Vince Russo to be head of creative. Slowly but surely, WWF starts going up. WCW is still going up. 1998. I think that would be peak WCW, 1998. WWF still going up. Eventually catches them. And, well, eventually passes them up. 1999, WCW starts going down. WWF still going up. Vince Russo jumps ship, goes to WCW, but he couldn't save that ship. And basically, WWF wrote the coattails of the Attitude Era to about 2002, more or less. And then starts the decline. So for 18 years... the WWE has been in decline. So the brilliant Vince McMahon, to try to pull this out, who does he get to hire? Well, full circle, 1995, the one, the only, Bruce Prichard. So I guess we could more or less expect Dr. Yankum to come back, a one T.O. Hopper to make a comeback, the Goon, and of course everybody's favorite, the one, the only, Mantar. Not sure what McMahon is thinking at this point. Wanting to go back to the year 1995 where it was basically at its worst. Got better. And it went back to being at its worst. So all that to say, WWF / WWE, you will be this week's imbecile of the week for putting Mr. Bruce Pritchard, head of creative, once again, even though he was responsible for the worst time period in the history of that company. And that'll do it for this week, you imbeciles. Give me a follow on Twitter at @ThePauly_Esther. That's @ThePauly_Esther on Twitter. And tune in again next week. Who knows? Maybe you'll be the imbecile of the week.
I mean, there you go. That speaks volumes, right? And I actually agree with something that Polly had to say for maybe the first time ever. Polly said pretty much the same thing. You know, are we going to see Teal Hopper again? Are we going to see the Goon? Are we going to see all these stupid-ass gimmicks? What are we going to get out of Raw now? Like, how is Raw going to magically change and become such a great show?
The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
Let's close off with the predictions for tomorrow's WWE Backlash. We have Jeff Hardy against Sheamus. I've enjoyed the story between these two. It's been going on for a couple of months now. I don't know if this is the final match, but I think it's going to be a really, really good match. And I don't know if it's going to be, you know, there may be another match. Extreme Rules is the next pay-per-view on the calendar, and maybe they'll have some kind of a gimmick match there and like the rubber match. So, you know, for that line of thinking, if there will be another match after this, then Sheamus should win this match. That's my pick. I think they'll have one more match, maybe like an Extreme Rules or a ladder match or something. I don't know. At Extreme Rules. And I think Jeff will win that one. But I'm going to pick Sheamus to win this one. U.S. Championship match. The U.S. Champion Apollo Crews taking on former champion Andrade. You don't want to kill Apollo Crews' momentum right now. So there's no reason why Apollo loses this match. Leave the title on Apollo. Continue to push him. Andrade will be fine. I mean, they got their own shit to deal with now with their own crew and all that. So I'm picking Apollo Crews to retain the United States title. Women's Tag Team Championship match. The champions Bayley and Sasha Banks taking on Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross and the Iconics in a triple threat tag team title match. I could care less. I really could. Given the fact that Bayley and Sasha just won the titles, it'd be stupid to take them off them again. Even though the Iconics ended their first reign, and Alexa and Nikki had it for a while, I don't think that Bayley and Sasha are going to lose. I will pick them to retain their titles. Raw Women's Championship match. The new Raw Women's Champion, Asuka, defending against Nia Jax. No fucking way in hell Nia Jax is going to win this title. And if she does, you're going to see some real backlash. Universal Championship match. Probably one of the dumbest matches in history. Universal Champion Braun Strowman defending against The Miz and John Morrison in a handicap match. Do you really think Braun's going to lose this title? Bray Wyatt's been out for a while because he just had a baby. I can see him coming back and maybe playing a part in this. But I don't think he's going to cost Braun Strowman the title. I do think that Braun will keep the title and will face The Fiend probably at Extreme Rules coming up. So Braun Strowman defends his title against Miz and Morrison here. WWE Championship match, the champion Drew McIntyre against Bobby Lashley. This would be a beautiful time for Bobby Lashley to get the run that he surely deserves after all these years. I can't see it happening, though. Drew has been booked so strong. And maybe that's what they want you to think. Maybe they want to lull you into a false sense of security and actually pull a swerve and have Bobby win the title. But I think Drew is going to retain. And finally, the greatest wrestling match ever, the way they're booking this, Edge versus Randy Orton. Given the fact that Edge won the Last Man Standing match, would it make sense for him to win this wrestling match here? I don't know. I'm almost wanting to pick Randy here, and maybe they'll have a rubber match, you know, at SummerSlam. But with Edge being so down on himself, it's hard to count him out. Like, it's just wrestling psychology-wise. The fact that he has all these odds that he has to overcome, it wouldn't make sense for Randy to win. It would make sense for Edge to win. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence on this one. And I think they were going to fight in Saudi Arabia as well, but that was canceled. So you know what? My gut tells me that Edge is going to win this match. So that's what I'm going to go with. So those are your predictions for WWE Backlash. I know I didn't do a post-game show for NXT, and I'm super sorry about that. Let's go over real quick the results of that pay-per-view. I had a few right, I had a few wrong. obviously, Adam Cole defended his title. I did pick Dream to win. Karrion Kross defeated Tommaso Champion. I got that one right. Io Shirai won the NXT Women's Championship, which I believe I picked Rhea Ripley for that. Keith Lee defeated Johnny Gargano. That was kind of an easy one. Finn Balor got the win as well. I didn't get the six-woman tag team match wrong. I thought Candice, Dakota, and Raquel were going to win, but Mia Yim, Shotzi, and Tegan won, which doesn't make sense to me at all. But that's what happened there. So, and it was a really good event. It really was. The only dumb part I really didn't like was Keith Lee putting Johnny Gargano through the plexiglass. We've seen this so many times, like in Elimination Chamber matches and all that. But, you know, Keith Lee starts running at Johnny, almost like Braun does, you know, when he gets the train rolling. And pounced him right through the plexiglass. And Johnny jumped up over the board part, almost like, you know, like the hockey boards, you know, and the plexiglass sits on top of it. Jumped up so he can go through the plexiglass. Really? Are you really going to do that in real life? That just looked pretty dumb to me. But, you know, that's splitting hairs. Overall, I thought In Your House Takeover was a really good show. So that wraps up the show for this week. If you guys want to follow me on Twitter, it is at RadRobGaming. Check me out on Twitch. I'm a Twitch gaming streamer. Twitch.tv/RadRobGaming. Streaming every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central and every Sunday afternoon at 2 in the afternoon. And check out my YouTube gaming page. It is RadRobGaming. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, it is at RadTurtlesPod. Send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. Leave us a like on Facebook, Facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. And check out our Pro Wrestling Tee store. It's ProWrestlingTees.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. You can also follow our network. Richie Reardon and I have created our own network called the R&R Podcast Network. You can follow the network on Twitter at RR Pod Network. Speaking of Richie, he and I will be back on Sunday for a bonus show. It'll be releasing Sunday morning, so you'll have time to listen to it. It has nothing to do with Backlash or anything like that. I'll be back. I don't know if Richie will join me, but I'll be back Sunday night as well for the WWE Backlash postgame show. But Richie and I are dropping a bonus show on y'all tomorrow, Sunday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern time, with the truth about why we left the Reality Check Podcast Network. If you thought CM Punk had dropped a pipe bomb, well, we're about to carpet bomb Mr. John Wangland from the Reality Check Podcast Network. The truth will be told. And the truth will set you free. And we are free. So check that out tomorrow as our bonus show. Until then, guys, thanks for listening. I appreciate all your support. We'll see you on Sunday. Take care, guys.
Thanks again for listening to the flagship edition of the Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Please follow RTW on Twitter at Red Turtles Pod. You can also send us an email at RedTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We'd like to thank you for all your support. You've been listening to the Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast, exclusively here on the R&R Podcast Network.